Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host. We've seen a lot in the news lately about wildfires in California and the incredible, unfortunate damage that has happened as a result. And we all know in the water sector that water professionals are really first responders. And I'm fortunate for this episode to be joined by some of the members of one of the water utilities in Calabasas, California, Las Virgenes Municipal Water District. Today we're joined by Dave Peterson. He's the general manager. We're joined by Brett Dingman, the water reclamation plant manager, and also by Mike McNutt, the public affairs and communications manager. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for finding some time after this disaster to chat for the podcast.
Thank you, Travis. We're excited to be here and to share our story with you.
Before we talk really about the fire, could you just describe your service area?
Sure. Thanks, Travis. This is Dave Peterson. Our service area is it's a fairly large geographic area. We're part of a joint powers authority. And so we have a partner, the Triumphal Sanitation District. And we serve for sewer service, we serve the western portion of Los Angeles County and the easternmost portion of Ventura County. So it's basically the entire, a majority of the area that burned in the Woolsey fire, about 90,000 people, population-wise.
I think I might have seen a statistic about how much of your service area actually, you know, was burned or you know, really impacted by that fire. Do you guys know that?
Yeah, it's about 2/3 our surface or land area.
Wow, that is incredible. 2/3 of your area impacted by that fire. So let's turn to that. What happened?
We were actually at a meeting on Thursday when the fire broke out. The fire started about 2:30 in the afternoon on Thursday. And this was Thursday's, I can't recall the date.
Yeah.
But Thursday afternoon, we were in a meeting. We got word that the fire was burning in a wildland area. It's really an unpopulated area. And it was actually in Ventura County. But the reports, we knew we had Santa Ana conditions. We had strong wind, red flag conditions. And the fire was burning to the southwest. And so we knew that it was actually headed in a direction of concern. A populated area in Ventura County that is part of our Joint Powers Authority partner called Oak Park. And you may recall that Oak Park was hit first by the fire. That was the first urbanized area to be impacted. So we actually were pretty quick in activating our emergency operations center. We activated at 4 o'clock. And in fact, that was long before the fire had even threatened any structures. And fortunately, we did that. So we were beginning to mobilize and get together our resources. It was towards the end of the day. And so we had our employees stay on after work to respond to the fire. And we really, things started as really a monitoring exercise that we were monitoring the progress of the fire, beginning to prepare resources. We actually made the decision to order some emergency generators, anticipating that power outage would be a problem. And so we had several emergency generators on the way. In our emergency operations center, we use this standardized emergency management system, or SEMS, similar to what the fire department uses. And so we set that in place and set up our operational leads for the different, you know, sort of aspects of emergency response.
Being in that area of the country, you know, that's very dry, and you get these Santa Ana conditions, the high winds, you see a fire reported and you kind of, your concern immediately goes up, or you at least concern goes up and you're like, hey, let's watch this carefully. I mean, that's a pretty quick thing for you.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, fire is not uncommon. So we're prepared for it. And there's actually brush fires in the fire season are not that unusual, but this one was unique in that for a couple of reasons. One, we had really, really strong winds and strong, you know, conducive environment for fire to spread. And it was headed in the direction of our service area. So that made it a little bit unique. We don't necessarily sort of activate our emergency response with every fire, but this one, we certainly saw the threat early on.
Yeah. One of the things kind of that I got some information about is this, your infrastructure designation, something about the designation, and then also about how complex and difficult navigating the fire was and the topography and all that. Could you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, this is Brett. We have 22 zones in our system, a lot of topography. So it's difficult to get to these sites when there's a fire burning through. And then we also lose power at these facilities with a fire. So it makes it difficult to address the fire, you know, and pump the water when this happens. So what we do with when we activate the EOC is we get the generators in, as Dave mentioned, because we anticipate losing power. And then for wastewater, we have two major facilities. We have the wastewater treatment facility, which is Tapia, and then we have a composting facility. They're 4 miles apart because there's no room to build a solids handling facility next to the wastewater plant. So you could just picture two plants attached by a 4 mile long pipeline. And so being in separate areas makes, you know, and we'll talk about it more later, but one was affected and one really wasn't.
So you talk about the topography diversity. You've got, you know, a lot of these mountains and canyons and steep areas and all that kind of thing. And so you've got parts of your infrastructure that's located throughout this area and is, you know, varying degrees of difficulty getting to it.
Yeah, the rugged terrain is a challenge for a whole bunch of reasons. A lot of infrastructure is needed to connect those facilities that are sort of remote. They're difficult to access. There generally aren't a lot of access points to get to them like you would in a city. And so those access ways were a lot of times blocked or cut off because of fire or fire response. The other thing is we lost power to basically every facility in our district, which is pretty unprecedented. I don't know that that's ever happened before. And these were power outages that were caused by the fire itself and the fire conditions. So we were needing to operate either from on the water system from gravity storage or with backup power. And so we have backup power at many of our critical facilities, but not every facility. And so we were working hard on getting mobilizing emergency generators and taking them out to the key pump stations where we needed to power pumps and move water to fill storage that was being used for firefighting.
Yes, Travis, this is Mike. I wanted to add to something that Dave was just talking about is when we opened up the Emergency Operations Center, our main focal point was to make sure that we had our system sound, meaning that we had to have the water be delivered to the firefighters for them to keep the community safe and to be able to do their job. So we took every precaution that we could possibly take to make sure that our system was running efficiently and effectively to provide them with that vital tool, which is water, to combat the fires. And we managed this through our SCADA system. We were able to keep tabs on water levels in our tanks and the pump stations themselves. And so this was our number one priority as we watched this event unfold with everybody else on TV. So we were in the Emergency Operations Center all night for several nights in a row. And on that first night, it was something I think that I can speak for everybody. Watching this unfold on TV was something that I personally will never forget. And we stayed there to make sure that the next morning we could go in and start making sure our system was sound as those firefighters and first responders kept on combating this fire.
Wow, that's incredible. And what type of communication did you guys have with the fire department and other rescue personnel as this is happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. We were in constant communication with both Los Angeles County Fire Department as well as the Ventura County Fire Department. And we would receive kind of like situation briefings whenever they would put them out. And one of the, as this was unfolding, one of our primary mechanisms to stay engaged was through the use of social media. We found that Twitter was really the social media platform where we had information that was being shared and we could distribute to those people directly impacted by the fire. And so we were both able to make sure that people had information that they could get, like evacuation orders, et cetera. But we also kind of like understood where the fire was going and what people were dealing with in real time. And this was a mechanism that we used to make sure that when there was water-related issues, that we were able to communicate effectively with the community and the cities that reside within our service area.
Dave had mentioned about the fire actually impacting your infrastructure. As the fire progressed, paint that scene. How did things unfold? Where did the fire move? How did it impact actually your infrastructure and your facilities?
It was pretty interesting and challenging how that progressed. You know, the fire started at a single point and it progressed in sort of a direction. But as it moved, it began to spread and it had such a wide front that it was really threatening urban areas in multiple locations. And so it became difficult to sort of track where the real fire front and threat was. So the fire came, it went southwesterly to Oak Park. It burned around the mountain there and came around in the front. It also burned over the mountain and threatened our headquarters office here. We were actually in the office, about 20 of us manning our EOC, and fire really sort of encircled the office here.
Wow.
We were, keep in mind, outside of the evacuation area, and the fire had jumped the freeway, the 101 freeway, and burned very quickly towards us. And then it progressed basically to the south, which is towards the ocean, and then towards Malibu. And so fortunately, the firefighters, there was a strong presence of firefighters at our headquarters building. They protected the building. And our emergency operations center, and we were in contact through an employee at the fire incident command post, and so we could communicate with that employee, who would then communicate to the incident commander, you know, where we were being threatened, and decisions were made as to what resources could be deployed to protect our facilities. And so our headquarters, fortunately, was one of those facilities protected. The fire continued to burn towards our composting plant, which is south of our headquarters. And some interesting lessons learned, I know you were interested in hearing about those, Travis, is, you know, the firefighters, when they come in, the engine companies don't just roll into your facility and start protecting it. What they do is they have sort of battalion chiefs that are out in their suburban scouting the fire front and the areas that are threatened. And the battalion chiefs are calling the shots on where to place their engine companies. And the first thing they ask is they want to know, are there people there? Because their first priority is life safety. They assess the property, but also they look at the environment, and protecting the environment is one of their priorities. And so understanding the function of the facility is important to them. And so for people that are faced with fire and in the business of operating water and wastewater facilities, you want to be prepared to explain to the firefighter, the fire chief or battalion chief, why is your facility important? Why should they protect it? And, you know, partly how persuasive you are will determine the response. In our case, the other thing that they'll be asking about is what is there that can hurt them? And they ask that question almost exactly like that. So they want to know about chemicals, what types of chemicals are there, and they want to understand what are the properties of those chemicals that could hurt them if, you know, heated or in the event of fire. The challenge we had for our composting facility is that we digest biosolids there. And so there's methane gas that's produced as a result of those that biosolids digestion process. And we did let them know about that. And I think, unfortunately, that did create a concern or a hazard, potential hazard for the firefighters. So they did not initially feel safe entering that canyon to protect that facility. And so that facility did suffer some fire damage.
Okay. How severe?
You know, we assumed the worst, or I assumed the worst at the beginning, and I was imagining a total loss.
Yeah.
And this just kind of goes to the thinking at the time. You know, for me, I was thinking that the facility would burn to the ground and that it'd be basically a $50 million loss. Mm. But fortunately, because of the construction, it's a masonry block unit set of buildings. They're pretty fireproof. So the damage, although we did sustain some damage to one of the buildings and the roof and the windows and some of the internal components, for the most part, the building is completely salvageable. The equipment inside is mostly all functional with a couple exceptions.
That's incredible. And then what about the actual water reclamation facility? That was a priority for the fire department to protect that.
Yeah, because as Dave mentioned, we established communication with the fire department. As the fire was approaching, and this is several hours later, even the next day after it burned through on Friday, so Saturday this would be, Dave and I were able to communicate with the fire department, and they brought in some airdrops, which protected it. So basically the fire skirted around to the west of the wastewater treatment facility, and it wasn't affected by it.
Hey, Travis, can I add something, if you don't mind?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, so on that Friday afternoon, our facility is situated on Las Virgenes Road. In fact, all three facilities that we're talking about, and headquarters is closest to the 101 freeway. And then as you continue south toward Malibu, you hit our composting facility and then to our Tapio water reclamation plant. And you could see where the fire was getting closer and closer to the 101. And we actually could watch it jump the freeway. And we knew at that time that this was definitely something was moving toward us. And midday on that Friday, after the fire started, it, as Dave mentioned, it engulfed and completely enveloped the headquarters building. And as the battalion chiefs and then the fire crews came out and kept the fire at bay. The fire continued to have its sights set on just continuing to move down Las Virgenes Road. And we own a significant amount of property as you continue down Las Virgenes Road into the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area. We use that to actually distribute some reclaimed water when we have excesses of it. And the fire pretty much torched all that as it did approach our Rancho composting facility. It again kind of just went straight through it. But as Dave alluded to, we had minimal damage, but also that the buildings were created in such a fashion to be as fire resistant as possible. A lot of the surrounding vegetation was burnt up, and some of our different wood chips that we use for the composting process were also catching on fire. And obviously the methane tanks where we would emit the methane for the biosolid processes were spared. That was a major concern for us as well. And then as you kept on going down by the water reclamation facility, that, if I'm not mistaken, was pretty much spared from any damage. And I know that we had that, that there's a designation specifically for that, that the fire personnel took into consideration. I don't know if that's something you want to talk about as a different component to why that was significant.
Yeah, I could. You know, something that I think we did better when we were talking about the Tapio Water Reclamation Facility, our treatment plant, we did a better job explaining to Fire Incident Command the importance of the facility. And I think, you know, everybody naturally wants to explain how important their facility is, because including their homes, because they want them to be saved. So there's a sense of a little bit being reserved, but it is an important time to explain the function of your facility. And in the event, and also to explain what would happen if your facility was destroyed. And in the case of the wastewater treatment plant for us, what that would have meant is that raw sewage would be spilled into Malibu Creek and would flow freely out to Malibu Lagoon and to the Santa Monica Bay and result in what would be an environmental disaster. And we were not shy in explaining that because it's the truth. And it, I think, made the difference in terms of getting the aerial support to knock the fire down as it approached Tapia. And it happened a couple times where fire was approaching. Brett was there along with his staff, and they would take pictures, and you would see the flames coming down the hill.
Wow.
And we would put in the call to incident command, and within minutes, an airplane or a super scooper would be there, and they would have an aerial strike. And I I believe that it's because they understood the importance of protecting the environment as one of their firefighting priorities.
I can visualize a lot of what you guys are talking about. I mean, it's just incredible stuff. I'm curious about how the fire impacted you all as people and your employees. I mean, you're dealing, this isn't just where you work, but, you know, this is where many of you live. And so you've got a lot of other concerns in addition to what's happening with your water facilities and so forth. So, yeah, what was that side of this like?
I can tell you there was definitely a real human element to this entire response. And there were a couple points. There were multiple times during the response and the emergency that it really, really hit home. And for me, I don't happen to live in the service area, so my home was not threatened. But what I was seeing, and as I was hearing the stories, and even employees who were in our emergency operations center were watching TV and seeing their own communities on TV burning and not knowing if their own home was safe and had been protected. It really hit home how big a deal this was and how significant and how severe. And I'll tell you, it really changed the tone, the feeling. There was an immense kind of feeling of obligation to do everything we could possibly do. We were doing it already, but it just felt that much more real. We had also gotten word and learned that one of our board members had lost his home. And that was another point where it became very real. And then, of course, seeing the flames ourselves directly around our own building and feeling threatened ourselves, where we were, you know, really kind of having to make a decision, should we try to evacuate or shelter in place? We ultimately decided to shelter in place. Those were very scary incidents that really made this feel very real. And
Travis, if you don't mind me adding something to this conversation too, about the human element. When the light of day came shortly after the fire went through much of the populated areas of our service area, we immediately sent crews out of two field customer service representatives to start immediately looking for water that was just freely running or spewing out of connections to homes and turning that off. The reason why we wanted to do that is to make sure that both the pressure in our system was as maintained as it possibly could, and also because it was still an active fire situation, to make sure that the firefighters had enough water to continue battling the flames. But more interesting than that, perhaps, is that there was a lot of people who either stayed back or somehow got back in to see if their homes were destroyed. And there was some people that were out there and they would come up to talk with us. And they would come up and they would tell us kind of like, you know, they just wanted somebody to listen to them. And we were there kind of like to tell them that we understood what they're going through, that we feel for them, that a lot of our employees were also a part of the evacuation areas that we're still trying to figure out what's going on with them. And so we were a sounding board for different people who had gone through a very traumatic situation. And then, of course, our customer service representatives, both that stayed here, that worked long, long hours, would field calls again from individuals. And one of the things that that I found most endearing and most empathetic was that all of those individuals who work here were just good listeners to people who went through very traumatic experiences. And I think that's something that we like to highlight, is that we are a part of the community just as much as everybody else is, and we're here and we're going to be here and we're going to keep serving our community to the best of our abilities.
It sounds like, in addition to protecting a lot of your infrastructure and facilities, one of the motivating factors in doing that was making sure also that the firefighters had that important tool of water in their arsenal as they were working to protect the service area and those communities too. So that had to be a big motivator. Now that the fire's contained and passed, and what are there any immediate concerns for you all?
I think actually, in a lot of ways, now is the hard work. You know, and what we described during the actual emergency response effort, you know, you have a lot of adrenaline pumping. We're working long hours. You know, there were employees that were here all night. You know, we had to tell them to go home. There were employees sleeping in their offices. But, you know, and that was sort of like a sprint. I think now we're, you know, starting the marathon recovery process. So we're transitioning from emergency response to recovery. And recovery just takes, it's just a long process. But there are a couple priorities. Number one is we are trying to restore the normal operation of all of our facilities. And we did have damage also at our water treatment plant, which is in Westlake Village. That burned, a portion of that facility burned as well and damaged our chemical pumps. So our first priority is to get our filter plant operating again, get all of our facilities back to normal functional order. The other part is then to get them cleaned up. There's a lot of debris, fire damage, to get things cleaned up and get them also restored back to their normal condition, both aesthetically and structurally, and protect them from the elements. There's places where the roof is compromised, there's holes in the roof and that kind of thing. And then the other thing that we're trying to do is be sensitive and empathetic to the impact to our customers. And so we took a pretty quick action. We had an emergency board meeting and the board passed a resolution to provide some relief to customers whose homes were damaged by the fire. And so we're forgiving bills for that billing period where their home was destroyed or rendered uninhabitable. We're also going to adjust bills for customers that had unusually high water usage because of the fire. And then we're also taking some action to work with our local cities and land use agencies to help expedite the rebuilding process and to reduce the overall cost of rebuilding for customers to try to help support that effort. So there's a lot of work to be done. And that's not to mention the financial aspect of this and the FEMA reimbursement process that we'll be going through, the insurance claims, because the facilities were protected by fire insurance. So we'll need to go through all of that. There's quite a long recovery road, but we're all dedicated to do it. And the work's already begun.
I'm sure that the learning will continue as you go and assess how things went and go through all this recovery. But any other immediate lessons learned or things you've thought about? Or, I mean, again, given that you live in this part of the country, do you feel like you were kind of as prepared as you could be for something like this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Travis. This is Mike again. We live in an area where we know wildfires. It could happen really at any given time. And on that day when it did start, we all were cognizant of the winds blowing. And when that fire started, you know, all the way where it did, which is miles and miles away, we just kind of had that sneaky suspicion with the situation that was developed that it could come our way. So we were very prepared. We have an up-to-date emergency response plan. We do some different activities to make sure that we are prepared as best you can be for the real event. And I think moving forward, one of the biggest things I think that we can do is kind of share our story like we're doing with you today. We live in an area where we have so many different water agencies that have a real responsibility for both making sure that homes and businesses have water, but also that we process the water when it's used and do that in an environmentally sensitive and conscientious manner. We're in the business of long-term water reliability, and we live in a state where the impacts of many different things, but now climate change is becoming more and more apparent, that these things may happen more frequently. And so for us to be able to share our story with other water agencies and just organizations in general and kind of share what we went through, we hope that that will help them prepare for what's down the road moving forward as well.
Dave and Brett and Mike, I thank you again for taking the time to share this story. I wanted to connect with you all as quickly after this disaster as possible because I just wanted to share it with the rest of the water sector and people in our profession. So thank you all very much and, you know, good luck in the recovery road ahead.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, Travis.
Words on water.